Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like history, the visual arts, communications, and comparative religion. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're joined by Dr. Brett Opegard, an associate professor in the School of Communications at the University of Hawaii at Manoa and the lead investigator of the UNID project.
Brett, thanks so much for talking with us about the UNID project, your audio descriptions of national park brochures. You've been doing this for several years now, right? So you've been getting feedback from park visitors and from users. What are you hearing about the applications?
Well, thank you again for having me. This has been one of the most rewarding parts of the project, has been just the little comments you get, or even the big comments you get from groups. But little comments you get from people that say, this made a great difference in my life. For example, we had one American Council of the Blind member who had lived her entire life 6 miles away from Minuteman National Park. She'd never been there. We invited her over. We had her listen to our descriptions. And she just marveled at what an experience it was, that she had just never been felt welcome there. She never felt like there was anything for her to do. There was never any kind of outreach to her, but this project made that kind of difference. And we get these sort of comments all the time, and it's not just national parks. There's a whole segment of society that is kind of cut off to people who are low vision or blind or just prefer to experience the world through other senses than their eyes. And we've just found that by imagining the world as a multisensory place and imagining the world as something that you can learn about in more ways than one, that I think people really respond well to that.
You know, it's funny because we had some guests on a little while back that are more in the exhibit and interpretive world, and they actually sort of used almost the exact same language you're using, which is they're trying to now design their exhibits.
Not to privilege any one sense.
They're multisensory, but they actually said they're trying to design experiences, not what I think of as an exhibit, which is often a lot of visual material. If we have these audio descriptions, so someone who either prefers or has to get their information through their ears, is there any sort of cross-platform or sensory work so that there's more, say, touch involved? I'm just thinking if I had to go, say, to a national park with a blindfold on, the audio descriptions are great, but does that come with more opportunity to touch rocks?
Yeah, this is a story I hear quite frequently from people who are blind, have been to national parks before. And one story that comes up quite often is people say, well, yeah, I went on this drive to a national park and it was just like driving around a parking lot. You know, nobody described anything to me. You know, there's no, it's just missing out on so many aspects of what the experience can be for people. And audio description combined with tactile exhibits is a very rich experience for everybody. And if you imagine your fingertips as sensors that can bring in information to you and very rich information, and then you imagine you're listening to somebody describe what you're touching, you can learn a lot from that. I can kind of imagine being a mechanic underneath a car and you're feeling around for a part you need to remove or something. You don't need your eyes for that. You just need somebody to tell you, you know, it feels like this and it's got a nut this size or whatever, and that people can experience the world in all sorts of rich ways.
You've done audio descriptions for over 100 parks. Do you know in any of those parks whether they've followed up to make their interpretive programs or their visitor centers or whatever more robustly multisensory to accommodate a wider range of visitors?
Well, I think that's the direction everybody's headed. Like you said earlier, that all the designers of museum exhibits are imagining the world in multisensory ways now, because they've come to realize, and you probably had this experience where you go into a museum and there's an exhibit with hundreds of objects and dozens of texts and dozens of photographs, and it just hits you like a fire hose. And after about 15 seconds, you're ready to move on to the next thing. And what we found in research in museums is that people spend a lot less time on these exhibits than the designers imagine. The designers might imagine you're going to spend 5 minutes there and people spend 5 seconds. I think part of that's because the exhibit's only speaking to them through one sense, and that's through the eyes, and it's just kind of overwhelming them with the visual elements, and people crave more than that, and also your brain kind of gets full of all that information coming through one sense. So when you combine these other options, people can go to what they want and try what they want, but also, I think, learn more dynamically.
To me, thinking about it and thinking what I know about park visitor studies and meaningful experiences, I can see now why it would behoove someone like me to bring my little Unity app to my park visit so that I can sort of take things in with my eyes and listen to the descriptions to sort of pull information in on another channel, because it can be overwhelming.
Well, you can also use the Unity app before you go. And this is typical use of our audio descriptions. As people listen to it before they go, they think about, okay, what would be most interesting to me as a person who's blind or visually impaired? Where are the tactile exhibits? Where are the rocks we can climb on or touch or, you know, or whatever it is? And then that also helps to plan the experience. And then when you get there, you can use the descriptions to remember what you learned before, you know, when you're planning your trip. And then another use we found for it is people like to listen to it afterward. And, oh, remember that inkstand I was able to touch and feel? I want to listen to that description again.
It acts as a planning tool and not just as a description tool.
It's like what I said earlier about driving on the park or something. You don't know what's around you or what's happening. If you don't have access to the information and you can't take part in the planning, then where do you think people are going to take you? They're not going to take you to the things you want to do. This even goes down to the gift shop experience. You know, you go into a Park Service gift shop and the person will say to you, yeah, there's some keychains, there's some t-shirts, there's some picture frames, whatever. And what do you want to buy? And it's like, well, can you be more specific? You know, it's like, what kind of t-shirt? There's a t-shirt with a polar bear on it. Okay, so what kind of polar bear? Does a polar bear have a Santa hat on? Is a polar bear eating a fish? You know, I want to have my own style and I want to have a t-shirt that I want, not just what somebody picks for me. That's how deep I think it goes in terms of realizing the separation and how ostracized people are without vision. They really don't have a lot of agency in a lot of these experiences. And so we're trying to give that back to them.
I'm feeling actually kind of almost stupid and naive. It hadn't even occurred to me how difficult it could be to just go buy a t-shirt at a gift store if you wanted to be able to pick out the appropriate thing without having someone describe it to you in detail. Because Unity is providing infrastructure as an open source project for creating these kinds of audio descriptions, I was thinking, is there a way that you could leverage a platform like this to go into a gift store? And if I move my phone around or if I have someone do it for me, then I get sort of detailed descriptions of each item.
You're exactly right. That's the potential there in technology, is to change these systems to allow everybody access to them. I do have a colleague and I've been working with him on some ideas about doing some RFID research, in particular with tactile objects, because oftentimes at a visitor center, the tactile objects are there, but there's not someone there to tell you what they are. And so if you're imagining complete independence and full agency at a site, you want to be able to walk up like anybody else and touch the tactile exhibit, know what it is. And we think RFIDs offer some potential for that.
With these audio descriptions, you said that some people started doing these descriptions for live events first, what you call dynamic experiences, I guess is what you called it. And then there's static material like photographs, maps, a Mars rock or whatever. I'm still wondering, how do you go about describing some of these things like a map for someone? I know you said one of your goals is training people to be able to do this. If they're the expert in the material, then they can learn how to do this. But how do you even approach something so abstract like that?
Yeah, it's a great question, and that was one of the biggest challenges we found. When we received the box of brochures, a colleague and I spent about a year just kind of deconstructing the brochure, like what is it, what does it include, what are all the different parts? And then one of the things, of course, was a map. Almost every brochure has a map, not every brochure, but almost every brochure. And then what we came to understand about the map was that there are different types of maps. Some are for navigation, some are for cultural awareness, some are for natural awareness. There's all these different purposes for them. What we then decided to do is try to figure out what are the different purposes of a map. And once you can determine the purpose of the map, so for example, some maps are set up to show you what it used to look like 100 years ago. You know, now it's just a field like at Gettysburg or something. Those maps are different than ones that try to tell you how to get around town and get to the different points of interest. And then those maps are also different than the ones that tell you the elevation of the mountain and where the streams are. And so we first recommend that people determine what was the purpose of this map being included and what was it trying to communicate. And once you determine that, then you can start to break apart the purpose into a description.
You said earlier that, say, if you're describing a piece of art that appears in a brochure, you want to have the context and that you turn to your subject matter experts for help with all of that. Did they help with the maps as well, or is this structure that you came up with?
Yeah, we interviewed stakeholders across the spectrum. So we interviewed cartographers, we interviewed interpreters, we interviewed historians, we interviewed people who came to parks wanting to use maps. We started just asking them, what do you want to know from a map and what do you think a map is? And one of the curious comments we got from quite a few people who are blind is, why would a blind person need a map? And it sort of floored us at first. We thought, you know, if a blind person doesn't think they need a map, why would they need a map? This disenfranchisement is so deeply ingrained that people who are blind don't even think they need that. So we, in some respects, had to figure out how to do it, and in other respects, had to communicate why it's important.
I grew up being dragged around to every Civil War national park battlefield monument, and I was thinking about maps of battles, which is actually important. This is where a given division was, and they moved down this hill, and then the other division came up from the river. And on a battle map, you can see that very clearly and sort of take it in quickly, but to have it described could actually be extraordinarily useful.
Yeah, the map's not communicating this is how you go around the riverbed and up the hill. It's just communicating that that's what other people did, and that's why it's important to know the terrain.
It's telling a story, actually, in a certain sense, over time.
A temporal story.
So you spent a few years now coming up with some sort of nascent standards for doing this kind of work and a platform for actually helping to generate these descriptors in a way that is technologically available to a broad chunk of the population. Has it been successful with the end users? How useful is this to the target audience?
Well, we keep data on it, and it's exceptionally popular. I'm a little bit skeptical of our own data because it's one of those things where if you've never been given any access and then you're given some access, of course you'll love it. What I'm trying to push us past is the kind of original response of from zero to something, and now I want to make it from something to great. I think sometimes we do great work and it has set standards, and then other times I think it's very functional, and that's fine too. But I'm trying to push the whole idea beyond functional. And that relates to, we recently received a National Endowment for the Arts grant for a project in San Francisco to work on collaborating with some sound artists to do audio description around the Goldsworthy Walk in the Presidio area. That's basically an area where a prominent international artist has created sculptural type elements, and we would describe that in a certain way, in a functional way, a utilitarian way, but we also want to see what would happen if you bring sound artists into this and have them do their magic. You know, can we push audio description beyond just utilitarian discourse and put it into an artistic aesthetic?
It sounds like a great multi-channel thing that anybody could enjoy, whether they were visually impaired or not.
Yeah, and one of the sculptures is really interesting. It's on the ground and it's tactile. It's like a line on the ground that you can feel with your feet, but that's the sculpture. And so there'll be the descriptive part of that in a utilitarian way, like what is this trail? Why are you on it? What did the artist want to communicate? Then there'll be the tactile part, and then there'll be the sound art part of whatever our artists come up with. And we're going to be working on that in the fall and see where it takes us. So I'm very excited about just seeing, can we push this beyond everyday useful information into something that has the kind of inspiration that art can provide.
For more information about the UNID project, you can visit their website online at unidescription.org, and that's unidescription.org. You have been listening to Augmented Humanity, which is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.